Loggett is listening to this, a former political advisor to the ex-Health Secretary, Matt Hancock. Hello to you, Richard.
Good evening, Stephen.
So here we have a situation, Richard, where the JCVI are saying no, and the government might push ahead anyway. What is going on?
Well, I think it's important to look at what the remit of the JCVI is and what they said. So the JCVI was asked to look at the direct health benefits of giving the vaccination to children. And what they found was there was only marginal benefits versus the risks. And therefore, they could not sign off on a mass vaccination program, because as we know, for the majority of children, they would only get a mild illness if they got COVID. But what the JCVI did then say is they kicked it up to the chief medical officers of the four nations of the UK to say, let's look at the wider societal issues to do with this around the disruption to schools when they have to close because of COVID, and also the spreading of COVID that can occur within schools, and make a wider societal decision. So the JCVI remit here is quite important to why they came out with the answer that they did, and why the decision is now being looked at by Chris Whitty.
Yeah, and there's a big ethical question in there, isn't there, as to whether, why would we expect children to be taking a vaccine, not based on protecting themselves, but protecting other people?
That's absolutely right, and that is why I think the JCVI, which is a clinical body that looks at the clinical issues, has passed this over to the chief medical officer to look more widely, as I say, at the sort of societal impacts, and to make that sort of wider societal assessment. These are very, very difficult issues.
Is that a cop out?
I don't think it is. I think if the JCVI's remit was different, it would have maybe come up with a different answer. And I think ultimately what we found throughout this pandemic is that you need to look at the whole of society and make judgments based on that. So I don't think it's a cop out at all.
What would you do? What do you think is the right answer?
Well, I'm not a clinician, so I mean I would go with the clinical advice. So what we've had so far is that there is a marginal benefit, but a sort of a decision which is to pass it over to the chief medical officer. Let's see what he, who's an esteemed clinician, says. And I think going with his advice is always the best direction.
It's a big political decision, this, for Boris Johnson, isn't it? Especially when all of these kids are going back to school, Richard, and people will be watching the numbers and the infection rates over the coming days and weeks and pinning whatever happens on Boris Johnson.
I think that's right. I think the other thing that's worth sort of mentioning in all this is that a lot of other countries are obviously proceeding down this road. So, you know, if you look across Ireland, France, Germany, Spain, Italy and others, they've all taken this decision. I think politically there's been obviously some frustration at the JCVI. It has not come to a clear decision, and now further work is needed. But clearly, as you've indicated in your remarks at the start of the programme, this decision has been expedited and is being looked at very, very urgently because schools are in the process of returning. But other countries are taking a lead here, and we are in danger of falling behind.
Noreen Chamila is back with us again. Good evening to you, Noreen.
Evening.
Hiya. So you were telling me about the long COVID that you have, and you just at all costs want to protect your daughter from that.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I do understand the arguments of the NHS and, you know, greater society needs, but, you know, the benefits of the vaccine do outweigh any small risk to the child. And I was happy to take that risk on board and give my child.
Not according to the JCVI, they don't.
But the JCVI, I mean, there's over 5 million children in the US have already been vaccinated. They've been doing it since May, with very little evidence of the myocarditis in the young boys that they say that they see. But myocarditis is happening in coronavirus itself anyway. So your child is still at risk of having the same illness if they get COVID, or if they, but the degree to which you're at risk of getting it from the vaccine is much less. And I don't think the JCVI is totally looking at the clinical reasons for getting the kids vaccinated or not.
Well, of course they are. That's precisely what the JCVI does, doesn't it? It doesn't take in wider society. It takes in the clinical risk to children.
Well, I disagree with the JCVI's decision at the moment, and I'm sure there'll be a U-turn at some point.
And your daughter's come back to the classroom this week?
Yep, she's back at school this week, and I feel much better for the fact that she's got some protection.
And have the majority of children in America, I'm sure I should have these stats, taken the vaccine? Or presumably, Noreen, it depends which state it is.
Yes, I mean, I'm on the East Coast. The West Coast and the East Coast have higher take-up of the vaccine. And we're looking at Middle America without a falling behind in terms of vaccine, but that's a lot to do with the politics of the country.
Okay, Noreen, thank you very much indeed. 0885-909-693, if you're picking up the phone this evening, as to whether you think we should be vaccinating our children, 12 to 15-year-olds. Richard Slover, the other story, of course, in the news tonight, social care and how we fund it, a massive row looming over leaked government proposals to increase national insurance contributions to pay for social care, Richard.
Yeah, absolutely, Stephen. So there's obviously a lot of speculation over the weekend that we are going to see some announcement next week, finally, on social care reform. This is an issue that has dogged successive governments for over sort of 20-plus years. Boris Johnson did say on the steps of Downing Street when he was elected that he did have a plan for social care. We should see that hopefully next week.
What do you think of national insurance increases?
So I think there is one of the challenges we always have with social care is that when it comes to how to pay for it, we can't ever agree how to do it, which is why we never go ahead and deliver the reforms that are needed, which explains why when the pandemic hit early last year, that social care was so badly affected, because it is a sector that has been, frankly, under-prioritised and under-thought about by government for so long. I think that the things about national insurance that work for it is it does get enough money into the sector. So if it is a one penny rise, you would get the £10 billion that the sector needs to stabilise and transform, which is good. There is some precedence here. In the early 2000s, the New Labour government put national insurance up by 1p to fund transformation and change in the NHS, which did actually clear waiting times. And also, more widely, I think we need to see this as a longer-term reform. As I said, we haven't seen any reform in social care for 20-plus years. What we now need to do is to start making the sector more sustainable. National insurance is a good way to do that and to start to invest the money, which over time, everyone in society will benefit from.
But if you put it onto national insurance, of course, then you're loading it onto all earners, not just the risk. There are other ways to do this, Richard. And indeed, national insurance is capped, isn't it, at 2% once you start earning above certain levels in this country. So it's disproportionately, surely, hitting the poorest. And the rich get off yet again under this government with not paying, relatively speaking, as much as the poor.
I don't think it disproportionately benefits. I don't think national insurance disproportionately
benefits. 2% benefits. National insurance earnings, isn't there, once you get over a certain amount of earning. Why don't they just introduce a wealth tax?
Well, I think that's been sort of proposed previously and has never managed to get out of the trap. So if you go back to 2010, there was a proposal from the then Labour government to, you know, tax the home at the point at which you die, which was then labelled as a death tax, and that didn't go anywhere. And as I said, Stephen, when we kicked off this element of the conversation, it's the reason why this issue never gets out of the traps is because we can never agree on how to raise the funds. And as a result, what we have is a sector which has been significantly badly affected over the last particularly 18 months. We've seen what happens to people in social care who have been neglected. We can't allow this to continue. We need to find a way forward to raise £10 billion. There are no good options here. And actually, national insurance is probably the best of a quite frankly poor bunch, and politically is probably the one that will be easiest to get through.
Help me understand, Richard, why you think national insurance, because you're a former political advisor to Matt Hancock, why do you think national insurance is a better option than just hitting the richest in our society? Either a wealth tax on their income, so in other words, the additional rate taxpayers who are paying, you know, they're earning over 150 grand a year, or some type of inheritance tax, which would be taxed on someone's estate when they die, if their property over a certain value. Why not go for things like that rather than hitting everybody?
So I think this comes down to, as I sort of stated, the fact that the options are all fairly, have all got significant downsides. So on the inheritance tax, we have tried that. It was proposed in 2010 and was widely rejected. Indeed, the 2019 Conservative Manifesto specifically rules it out by saying you won't have to sell your home to pay for care in any form. So that's one element. And then on the income tax side, you need to put income tax up by two pieces. The thing about national insurance, which from a tax perspective makes it more attractive, is if you put it up by one piece, you get the employer and employee contributions that come together to make up the 10 billion that's needed. If you wanted to raise that through income tax, you'd have to put income tax up by, I believe, about 2p. So that, as I say, no option here is particularly attractive. Raising taxes is not an easy or popular thing to do, but I think there has to be an acceptance that social care sector, after 20 plus years, has failed us during the pandemic and needs significant new investment, and that needs to come from somewhere, and national insurance is probably the least worst option on the table.
Well, someone on with us on Friday night, Richard, was suggesting an insurance premium, that we should all take out an insurance policy.
So there are a couple of options with insurance. One is private insurance, but that market doesn't work. When I was in government, Stephen, in 2018 to 2019, we did look at this, but there's a reason why the private insurance market doesn't exist here. It's because you can't mitigate the risk of incurring significant costs. And if you have something, a condition like dementia, they can run into the hundreds of thousands. So there is no significant private insurance market. There isn't one that's going to sort of ride to our rescue here. If you went to a state-backed insurance model, so basically you started paying to the government a little bit of money at some point in your life, that is an option that you could look at, but that's basically a tax just rebranded as insurance. So I don't think there is a private sector solution to this problem. I think this is, as I say, you've got three or four major taxes that you can raise, and national insurance is probably the least worst of them.
Okay, Richard, thank you very much indeed. Thank you for joining us this evening.